This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to No More Booze, the podcast. I'm Olivia Farrelly, and in every episode, I explore the role that alcohol has in our lives. I interview people who have decided to live their life with no more booze. We'll explore their relationship with alcohol, how it made their life better, how it made their life worse, any lessons they've learned along the way, and what advice they would give to others who are contemplating a life without alcohol. So whether you are sober curious, you're sober serious, or you're already living your life alcohol free, this podcast will provide inspiration and motivation as you begin to untangle and reassess your relationship with the booze.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to No More Booze, the podcast. Today is a very special guest who I've been wanting to have on for a very long time. I think loads of people will know him. Anybody I've spoken to about getting him on, they've been delighted. You're incredibly popular, Connor. And I think you've become synonymous with Dry January in Ireland. You're nearly like the poster child of it. Connor Pope, you're so welcome to No More Booze. How are you?
I'm great, and thanks very much for having me. But I have to say at the very outset, if you told me 3 or 4 years ago that I would be the poster child of Dry January, I would have laughed in your face and said, absolutely no way, that's not going to be me. But it just shows you life can take these strange twists and turns.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, at I celebrated 7.5 years very recently. And if you had told me even 10 years ago that I would really enjoy an alcohol-free life, I would have, it's the most unbelievable thing in the whole wide world. Because I suppose the benefits that we seek, we weren't seeking them. And
that's
it's a
exactly
surprise.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the key point at the very outset, because when I did Dry January first in January 2022, I didn't do it with any real aim, or there was no goal, or there was no target. It was basically just hopping on the bandwagon that seemingly every other person in the country was hopping on. And I'd say, sure, we'd give up booze for the month of January. How hard can it be? And it's not like I was coming off the back of a particularly boozy Christmas, because I have young kids, so it's not like I'm going to the pub 4 or 5 nights a week or lorrying into the pints. I don't tend to drink spirits. So it wasn't really like I'd been drinking loads and loads and I felt like I needed to like give my liver a break. It was just, sure, you know what, nobody's going out, there's no crack to be had, we'll do this for 3 or 4 weeks and we see how we get on. And I have tried it in the past, or I had tried it in the past, and I hadn't been successful, because I think maybe over a period of 10 years, I might have tried it 3 or 4 times, and maybe once I got to the end of January successfully. So it is a challenge. It is hard for people, particularly, and a lot of people have said this to me, particularly as January is a pretty miserable month. Like, there's no crack to be had, and any kind of joy that can be brought into your world is to be welcomed. And I think an awful lot of people associate drinking with joy. And I now understand that that's probably a problematic view to take, but that's what a lot of people do. But anyway, so I got to the end of January 2022, was delighted with myself. Myself and my wife said, you know what, we'll give February a go. Sure. Like, you know, we're in the zone now. And I think February the 1st was a Monday or something, or a Tuesday. So it's not like we were going to be going, oh, it's the start of a new month, let's have some wine. It was a Monday, start of the week. So we said, you know, we'll keep it going for a couple of days, for a week or two or three. And then we went through February. And then March was kind of a key month because, you know, like there was no reason to stay off the booze in March. Like, you know, we'd already done our thing. We'd accepted the challenge. Obviously, you're feeling a bit better mentally. You're feeling a bit better physically. But, you know, like it wasn't like I'd given up booze forever. And that was never on the agenda. But then in March, the entire Pope household got COVID. And it was like, oh, well, you know, and it, like, and it, like, it wasn't a particularly nasty version of COVID, but it was still, you know, it knocked you for six. And that coincided with Paddy's Day. So, like, you know, there was no drinking on Paddy's Day. There was no drinking for most of March. And then, sure, once you're 3 months in, we said, we'll keep it going till we go on our summer holidays. Summer holiday time came in July. And neither myself or my wife had any real appetite to go back on the booze at that point. And the challenge then became, we'll do a year. And once you've done a year, it's like you start to see, as you'll know, you start to see there's real benefits in your life. And you kind of move away from this idea that alcohol is integral to your socializing. Alcohol is integral to your downtime. And you can say, do you know what? I'm actually grand. And that's kind of where it started.
Yeah, isn't it amazing that something so, I suppose, innocuous nearly has 3 years down the line, 4 years, you're 4 years.
4 years now, yeah.
Okay, wow. That it just, it again, it was kind of like me. So when I gave up, it was the, you know, the absence of a hangover that kept me going. And I suppose, you know, you mentioned joy there. And I suppose this is a huge thing as Irish people and, you know, the world over as well, that alcohol does equal joy, right? And when you give up alcohol, it nearly becomes part of your identity, you know? People think you're no crack anymore and that you become pious or whatever. How did you access joy, or was joy just more readily available?
Well, I mean, I think the key thing here is if you told me at the outset that this is the conversation we'd be having 4 years down the road, I probably wouldn't have done it. Because like so many Irish people, drink, it was integral to my world. It's not like I had a problem with alcohol, but it was just, it was central to social night, central to dinner parties, central to nights out in the pub, central to weddings, parties, nights in front of the telly. It was just, it was central to my world. So I would have said, no, I couldn't do without that. That seems like I'd be zero crack. And nobody wants to say, I'm just going to be like, you know, fun Bobby in Friends. And I'm just going to like be the really dull human being at the party. So it wasn't that was my target. It wasn't that was my goal. And if it had been my goal, I wouldn't have reached it. In terms of how I found joy outside of drinking, I think a lot of people who go on this, and I hate the word, but who go on this journey, realize that it's an artifice to suggest that the joy is the alcohol. You can actually find joy in everything without the crutch of alcohol. And you don't. And I think one of the key moments for me personally was when I was at a family wedding about a year and a half, maybe 2 years into the my newfound holy Joe sobriety, when it was obviously like all good weddings, it was a 2 day affair. So there was the wedding on day one. And then on the second day, there was a big party with all the family and there was a karaoke. And the fact that I could get up and sing Taylor Swift's Love Story in front of a group of 150 complete strangers, sober, told me that, you know what? In times past, I would never, ever, ever have countenanced that. But I can do it now, and I don't need that so-called crutch of alcohol to perform in a public space like that. And once you reach that point, you realize, do you know what? I'm grand. In terms of the joy, I actually like getting up in the mornings. I like waking up without a furry tongue and a slight headache. I like being able to pick up my teenage daughters from parties on a Friday night or Saturday night without feeling like it's impinging on my social life. And in times past, if I'd had a half a bottle of wine, and that's the level of drinking we're talking about here. We're not talking about massive amounts, but if I'd had half a bottle of wine, I wouldn't have been able to pick them up. I like the responsibility of being the taxi driver ferrying them around the city. And I like the fact that I can do it now without it being in any way problematic in my life. And I think those kinds of things bring me real value and they bring me joy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you said there that about getting up and singing a love story to 150 or best friends or family or whatever. Like, and you're a very confident person. You're very, you know, well used to public speaking, all the rest. But it definitely unlocks a new level of confidence that, like, it certainly I haven't seen before. I don't know, because I suppose when we take away the booze, it might leave a bit of a chasm where our confidence once was. But incrementally, we as sober Joes, you know, go and fill that kind of confidence piece. You become just a better version of yourself, don't you?
That's exactly right. And I think you need to go through the process to understand how the process works. Because when you're looking at it from the outside, you're thinking, oh no. And even if you do give up booze for 2 months or 3 months and you're going to social occasions, you feel kind of awkward. And I think we have a part of our culture in Ireland is to make people feel awkward. That they're not drinking alcohol. And I don't know if that exists in other societies. Like, one of the things that struck me when I was writing the piece in the Irish Times last year was, if you go to a dinner party and you say, oh, I'm not eating pasta today, nobody cares.
No.
Nobody gives a rashers. Yeah. But if you go to a dinner party or if you go to the pub and you say, oh, I'm not drinking tonight, it's almost like you've got this big red beacon on your head that's swirling around and the klaxon is going off and going, oh, there's an oddball with us. We have an oddball. And you're kind of thinking, it shouldn't be like that. It's not that I think people should not drink. It's not that I think people should drink. I just think that it should not be so relevant to a night out. And that's what makes people feel awkward. And that's where the lack of confidence in the early stages of this start to manifest themselves, because we are constantly being told that not drinking equals zero crack. We're constantly being told that not drinking means you're an oddball, you're peculiar. And it shouldn't be. I'm not advocating that the entire world stops drinking. I'm not advocating that the entire world continues to drink. I'm just saying this thing has worked for me. I feel better about myself. I feel better in my head. I feel better physiologically. You know, it's fine. And I think one of the things that's striking is that it becomes so central to conversations. And it's eventually the conversations become so repetitive. When I'm talking about people going, oh God, you haven't had anything to drink. And you can almost hear the questions forming in their heads. And the most obvious question that everybody is asking without asking it is, did you have a problem?
Yeah.
Were you an alcoholic? And when I say I wasn't. But and also when I say I didn't really struggle that much when it came to giving up booze, I don't want to downplay in any way, shape or form the real struggles that an awful lot of people have, because when it comes to alcoholism, it's a real sickness and it needs treatment and it needs respect and it needs support. So I don't want somebody who has a real problem with drinking and who's struggling to listen to me and think, well, he's a real dickhead because look at him saying it's not a problem. Look at him being all blithe and saying it's all grand. For some people, it's a huge problem and that needs to be acknowledged. Personally, for me, I thought it would be more difficult to give up booze than it actually turned out to be. I thought I'd struggle with it much harder than I actually did. But that's not to downplay the real struggle that a lot of people have with it. But I do think that the centrality of alcohol to our lives needs to be addressed. And just to give you a quick example, I lived in Spain in the mid-1990s for a couple of years. I was a TEFL teacher. Loved it. I went from being an unemployed philosophy graduate in Galway to being el profesor in Mount town in the north of Spain. But it was really evident really quickly that the Spanish young people's relationship with alcohol was it so different to my relationship with alcohol. And I was in my early mid-20s. So like I had a completely different idea of what a night out meant. So in Galway, where I grew up, you'd go to the pub at 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the evening, you'd lorry into the pints. And then closing time would come at midnight and you'd go to a nightclub, you'd lorry into the pints again, and then 2 o'clock in the morning would come, the nightclub would close and you'd go home. And that was the end of it. There was no lorrying into the pints in Spain. Mm. Like they weren't all sober, but they paced their drinking very differently. And I found when I got there, like by 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, I was plastered and they were going, but it's the night is just starting. We're going to be dancing till 7 in the morning. So you better wise up. And I think it was really interesting for me to see how different cultures, different societies have a different attitude to booze. And I genuinely believe that our attitude isn't great.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Yeah, no, it's that bingey that you were talking about as well. My sister-in-law is from Cyprus and we talk about, like we've talked in the past about like teenage drinking. And I was like, were you drinking naggins in a field? And she's like, no, I was not, you know? So again, culturally, I think though, like maybe England's culture is very similar to ours. Australia, they've that kind of bingey. And you know what you said there as well, you know, so many people having an opinion on you not drinking, right? I would love to see, you know, and I'm the same as you, like not everybody needs to give up drink. You know, there's lots of people around me who drink and who are perfectly fine. They're at peace with their relationship with alcohol. And that's what a lot of people are looking for. But wouldn't it be lovely if it just became a neutral life choice? Like, I'm giving up, like, maybe gluten-free or pasta, no more pasta or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I might have a new podcast called No More Pasta. But, you know, it's like, can it just become neutral? It doesn't have to be infused with judgment or people, like you say, exactly, people thinking you're an oddball. Somebody messaged me recently and she was saying all of her family think she's become really religious. You know, yeah. Just because, or like, you know, gone that kind of end. I don't know. Do you think that culturally in Ireland, it has changed? Like, I know levels of drinking have really gone down 30-odd% in the last few decades. Is that kind of, are we seeing that in the attitudes of people?
I'm sure we are. And I'm sure we're seeing it in the attitudes of younger people. Because like when I was a kid, like, you know, you'd have your naggins of vodka before the nightclub or the disco, as we might have called it back in the 1990s. And the kind of purpose of the evening was to get pissed. No, that's I don't think people in their late teens, early 20s now have that same drive. And when I know for a fact that when I did my intersert, as it was, to date me, you know, you did your intersert, you got your results, you went out, you bought a 2 liter of cider and you drank it down on Salt Hill Prom, and that was how you celebrated. I don't see young kids doing that quite as much nowadays, and I don't see young kids being driven by that same kind of zealous urge to get hammered as people in my peer group were when I was in my late teens, early 20s. And like, there's obviously other things that are taking that space. Like when I was a kid, nobody, and I mean nobody, took cocaine. Cocaine is now a real problem amongst an awful lot of people in Ireland. So it's not like society has become kind of a puritanical, zealous world. It's just the nature of the intoxicants has changed. And I think the relationship we had with alcohol has probably changed. But I do think that it's a thing that you see more in, as you say, Ireland, England, Scotland, Australia. And on one level, you could say it's a Northern European phenomenon because, you know, the weather is miserable and you're not like sitting out on a terrazza drinking lovely glasses of Riojas or whatever it might be. But, you know, it is a thing that we would do well to address as a society, not saying that everybody should stop drinking. And, you know, but just to say, maybe we could ease off on it a little bit. Maybe we could make it less central and less of a focus. And, you know, an awful lot of people, like, if you don't drink, as I say, for a man, people think either you're sick or you're an alcoholic. Yeah. If you're a woman and you say you're not drinking, people automatically assume that you're pregnant. Yeah. And that's why you're trying to keep it from everybody. And like, I remember going into an off license with my wife and we bought the non-alcoholic wine. We can talk about that in a second because I've had a fairly rocky experience of that. Some good, some bad. But the person behind the counter congratulated her.
Okay.
And it's like, for what? And it slowly dawned, oh, she thinks you're pregnant because you're drinking non-alcoholic wine. And like it shouldn't be the assumption that because you're not drinking, there is something, a huge life shift in, or a huge shift in your life that we need to address. It should just be, as you say, totally neutral. It's grand. Whatever works for you.
Exactly. And we mentioned there, but there's a huge amount of stigma and shame then associated with, so people in our lives or society at large will really encourage people to drink, 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 drink. And then if they cross a line where it becomes very problematic and they reach a rock bottom or whatever, then the individual feels so much shame and stigma and all the rest as well. So I suppose our view of alcohol and problematic drinking is very binary. Like you're either an alcoholic or you're not. And it's a lot more complex than that.
100%. And I think
Yeah.
an awful lot of people have a problematic relationship with alcohol
Yeah.
without being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think we would do well to talk about as a society. So, as you say, to move away from the binary or the black and white, you are this or you're not this, say, do you know what? We probably all have a problematic relationship. And I used to always, like 10 years ago, I would have been very judgmental of Americans who were very judgmental of us.
Yeah.
Because Americans have, they think we're all complete booze hands, you know?
Yeah.
And they're going, oh, I should have only had 4 pints.
Yeah.
And I could never really understand their perspective. Like, because I was always really critical of the World Health Organization, because obviously I'm in a great position to be critical of the World Health Organization, knowing absolutely nothing about medicine. But they would say binge drinking it amounts to like 3 pints in a session or 4 pints in a session. It equates to binge drinking. And I'd be going, that's nonsense. That's
Yeah,
not
yeah,
binge
yeah.
drinking. Binge drinking is like 14 pints. Like 3 pints is a football match.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of going, do you know what? 3 pints is fine. If it's grand, like if it's not going to do you any harm, it's fine. But it's not necessarily something that you should be celebrating.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I still don't necessarily think it's binge drinking, even though that's the medical classification of it. And I want to stress I have no medical qualifications at all, so your listeners should bear that in mind. But you know, I wouldn't, I can't imagine a world in which I would be doing that right now.
Yeah. And, but I suppose a huge amount of this kind of drive towards alcohol-free living and people choosing to give it up is a lot of the health research that has come out over the last kind of 10 years. And there's been a huge amount of the World Health Organization, as you just said, but they have said that no level of alcohol is safe,
Yeah.
as in none is. Less is better, but none is best. But I suppose, did you find any kind of health benefits when you gave up
Well,
and
before
since?
I answer that, I will say that for a long time I was living in complete denial about the negative impacts that alcohol was having on my health. So I would read stories in newspapers about WHO reports or about reports from in the Lancet or whatever about the damage that alcohol was doing. And I was told to go, hey, la, 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 that's not happening. No, that's not true. It's not, it's fine, it's grand. Should look at the Spanish. Don't they love a glass of wine and they live forever? Blah, blah, blah. All of these kind of micro lies that you tell yourself that everything is fine. And I do now realize that alcohol does have a long-lasting detrimental impact on your health. And I'll give you one example of the profound change. And this is a slightly personal example, but when I was my dad died of a heart attack in 19 in 2002. Didn't drink, you know, so yeah, smoked, but he gave up like 20 years before he died. But he died suddenly of a heart attack. So then for a long time after that, I kind of became really worried about my own heart and what it might do to me. Like, but being a typical Irish man, it's not like I went to the doctor to have it checked out, because oh God, no. But I just worried about it slow at a low level about what would happen if the same thing happened to me. So I used to do things like I would take my own blood pressure and I would I'd measure all these metrics that would kind of give me reassurance. And one of the things that really struck me about the time after I gave up alcohol was the profound impact it had. The profound impact not drinking had on my blood pressure. Now, I never, it was never high. It's not like I didn't suffer from hypertension, but it was always like, oh, it's 130 over 80 or 134 over 80, and you'd be going, yeah, that's a little bit high, but it's not something you'd be worried about. But once I stopped drinking alcohol, like it fell. And nowadays, like 120, 118, you know, so alcohol was driving up my blood pressure and I was unaware of it. So that was one impact of giving up alcohol that had a profound impact on my invisible health. It's not like I noticed it. It's not like it's had any change in my life. And it's not like my blood pressure was out of control. And the only reason I even knew what it was in the past was because my dad had died of a heart attack. So that's one thing. You do lose weight. It's undeniable. And again, that wasn't a goal, but it's a byproduct. And it's one that, like you're thinking, I'd prefer not to have to struggle with my weight. And like I don't. But some people do, and like I did lose weight as a result of drinking less alcohol. And that's not just the alcohol, by the way. It's the fact that if you're drinking alcohol, you're more likely to want to eat a full bag of Kiehl's crisps or a big bag of Doritos or whatever it might be. Or you're, you know, so that's something else that happened. Obviously, you're far more clear-headed, you're far more lucid, you're far more productive. All of these really positive benefits happen if you take alcohol out of the equation. That's not to say that a person can't live a perfectly happy life with alcohol in the equation, but I noticed those sometimes micro and sometimes major changes that were happening as a result of not drinking alcohol. And that's one of the drivers that has encouraged me to stick with it. Because why would I go back to doing something that didn't really bring me any profound joy? Now, don't get me wrong, I like a glass of red wine. I like a really cool, crisp vino verde and the Portuguese sun in the summertime. I like that stuff, but it didn't bring me any intrinsic joy. And the negative impacts were sometimes quite profound, sometimes not so profound, but there was just more negatives when it came to my physiological well-being than there were positives.
And that is very simply a case of a cost benefit analysis, isn't it? So
Exactly.
when we were kids, right, with our noggins in, Galway or whatever, so the costs were very low and the benefits were very high. But I suppose as we traveled through life, then the scales begins to tip in the opposite direction. So it's not, it's, maybe we were all fine with boozing in our teens and 20s, and then it just starts to, grate on us that little bit more. And then you come to a point, maybe in your 40s, I was 37 giving it up, and it was like, it's just not benefiting me. And it could simply be like the costs are too high. Like we can come at it from a huge amount of different ways.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. That cost benefit analysis is a really good way of looking at it, because there's no costs associated with it when you're 20. It's
No.
like, except the actual cost. But sure, that's
Exactly.
grand. But it's not really having said that, and it is something that I've reflected on in the past, there have been multiple, and there were multiple sliding doors moments in my 20s when there could have been a really, really profound cost associated with my drinking, because you lower your guard, you do things that are irresponsible and stupid and reckless when you're drinking that you wouldn't do when you're sober. And you can say, okay, well, sure, I had great crack doing that, but you can think, yeah, but at another moment and at another time, that thing that I had great crack doing could have killed me. Like, I am horrified at the amount of times I would have cycled home, both when I was living in Galway when I was living in Dublin, through traffic in the dead of night, without a light on my bike, without any kind of reflective gear, drunk. Like, I could have cycled under a bus. I could have cycled under a car. I know people who did die in terrible circumstances. I never drove drunk because I didn't drive in my 20s. And by the time I was in my 30s, I just wouldn't have done it. But and I'm not saying I would have done it in my 20s, but I just, the opportunity never presented itself. But I can tell you that I did get into cars where people were drunk or had drink taken, to use a very Irish phrase. And I only would have done that because I was drunk and my guard was down and I was irresponsible and reckless and foolish. I could easily have ended up dead because of drinking. I didn't. And that's nothing more than blind luck. Because when I hear of young people now who are beaten up or kicked to death because of fights outside nightclubs. And when I hear about young people who get into cars and somebody's drunk and they wrap themselves around a lamppost, I think that could have been me. It could have been any of my friends, because it is just blind luck that protects you. But now, and going, but that's a very long-winded way of saying, but now you look at it in a much more rational way and say, okay, well, the benefits aren't really there. The costs are really there, both for my health and everything else. So, you know, it makes no sense to continue drinking for me. For some people, absolutely knock yourself out, literally. Yeah.
Literally. And I suppose that's the joy of having these conversations, isn't it? So that people, we can present, you can present information to people, they can choose to take it on, but ultimately the choice is theirs. There's nothing evangelical about this, and that's certainly not the way I want to come across. But it's, if you feel that maybe the costs are too high, do what you do. Do Dry January. Maybe extend it to March. They say about 100 days is the great one to do, because you generally kind of go through all of your different milestones, like there might be a wedding or a social night out or a work party. So you have to actually get used to doing all those before you actually, you know, it becomes part of your life. And like you said earlier, you know, the initial awkwardness, it is initially awkward, but everything is, you know, so
absolutely,
you just have to kind of get over that. And you talked there about the cost, and I know that's your area of expertise. And I, Connor, unfortunately to tell you, I would imagine I've spent a couple of €100,000 on drink over my lifetime, right? Like going out a couple of nights a week, probably €1,000 a month, you know, if not more, you know, and all in different countries around the world. Did you notice you saved money when you gave up the booze?
Well, I mean, like, sometimes in my head, I calculate how much I would have been spending on alcohol. And like, if you think about it, okay, so let's say you're drinking 3 bottles of wine a week, okay, and each bottle of wine costs, I don't know, 12, 15 quid, 12 quid. So that's like, let's say you're spending €40 a week, which is less than the average Irish person spends on alcohol. You're looking at like a saving of in excess of €2,000 a year.
Yeah.
Now, you'd probably be spending more over Christmas, then there's weddings, then there's parties, then there's other, you know, summer holidays. So I think realistically, I was probably spending maybe €3,000 a year on alcohol. So that's 4 years that I haven't been spending that money. So I should have an additional €12,000 in my bank account. I don't. It's gone. I don't know where the money is.
I know.
And I think that's the great heartache. But that's the world. That's the world in which we live. Your life expands to swallow up whatever income you have. And
absolutely,
and in the same way that, you know, when I was in my 20s and right up until, I think, 1999, 1st of November 1999, I was a really committed smoker, loved smoking. And I would have been smoking 20, sometimes way more than 20 cigarettes a day. So I was really all in on it. You think a packet of fags now, I think, is 19 quid. So using today's sums, I was probably spending, you know, 150 quid a week on cigarettes. That's €7,500 a year. I gave up 25 years ago. I should have hundreds of thousands of euro in my bank account as a result of quitting smoking. I don't have that money either. So in terms of the financial benefits, yeah, they were there for sure. Have I got any of the money? I don't. And no more than yourself. If I was to do the maths and calculate how much I spent from, let's say, I think the first time I had a drink was in a friend of mine's parents' house when I was 15 or 16 in their drinks cabinet, and drinking the most disgusting cocktail of Hague scotch and vermouth and vodka and gin, just swigs of it, like it's vile. So let's say from the age of 16 to the age of 50, so how many years is that? 34 years. Well in excess of €100,000 spent on booze. And some of that was money well spent. I had lots of crack.
And that's okay too, isn't it? It's okay that two things can exist at the same time.
100%. And I think that's a really key thing. It's not like I'm going, oh, if only I had that money now. Like, what I would have missed out on some really great and fun life experiences.
Yeah.
Some of those experiences weren't so great, weren't so fun. But bottom line is, that's in the past. All you can do is look to the future. And I think one of the key things that I'd say to people here is, it doesn't. Sometimes I think we make it. Sometimes I think the narrative that we have in this country makes it seem like it's going to be harder than it actually is. And it's only like you and you've experienced this when you're living through it and you realize, do you know what? It's actually grand. And again, I'm not talking about the people who have a serious illness and who are fighting that illness every single day. I'm talking about people who maybe don't have the illness, but who have decided not to drink alcohol. They can very quickly come to the realization that it's not actually that hard. And it's just the perspective that the world has about our drinking and the narrative that we place around it that makes it seem like it's going to be much harder than it is. So that's why, if any of your listeners are going through dry January now and they're saying, oh, this is such a chore, I'm hating it, I'm hating every second of it. Do you know what? If you stick with it for a little while, it actually becomes easier. And then you move or you transition from it being easy to being it being a really rewarding thing. Although the key thing is that you don't then become all sanctimonious like I apparently have become. And as you say, I'm now the poster child for an alcohol-free world. And I was like, I don't want that. But there you go. That's the
I
world.
have a friend who calls me the sobriety propaganda queen.
There you go. There's worse things you could be called.
I don't think so. just incidentally there when you said about smoking, did anyone give you grief about giving up the fags?
No, and that's actually, it's funny. Nobody's asked me that question, and I haven't even thought about it myself. You get nothing but praise for giving up cigarettes. Like, everyone's delighted for you, even smokers. Although, as a smoker myself back in the day, you'd always feel slight resentment that other people were successful. But, like, nobody questions your choice to give up smoking. Everybody questions your choice to give up alcohol. And I think that's something that we should be asking ourselves, why? Like, what's the difference? They're both intoxicants. They both have long-term evidential impacts on your health.
They're both class one carcinogens.
Exactly. And that was something else, by the way, I was in total denial about when I was drinking, the fact that alcohol is a carcinogen. I was like, no, that's wrong. No. I'm sure those scientists and doctors, they must have got that one wrong. Like, smoking for sure. That's definitely bad for you. But drinking, no. Sure, it's invisible calories and it does you no harm. Again, completely wrong.
And then about the invisible calories. So 1 gram of sugar has 4 calories and 1 gram of alcohol is 7.
And
So it's nearly,
again, I would never, I would have, if you'd told me that 5 years ago, I would have said, I would have left the room. I said, I don't want to hear you talk to me about that nonsense. It's grand. But it's the reality of it. And that's one of the things that I don't know if you have any experience of this, but I have explored the world of alcohol-free and beers and wines. And I don't drink a lot, but I drink alcohol-free beers, especially if I'm on holidays. I like the ritualistic element of it. You're cooking at a barbecue, you open a bottle of beer. And you drink it. The fact that there's no alcohol in it is neither here nor there now. And obviously, I'm getting the sugar because there's still sugar in it. But you know what? I think, hey, life's worth, like, I'm not going to sacrifice everything. But the alcohol-free beers in our world are brilliant. Like, you're too young to remember this, but when I was a kid, people were drinking Caliber beer, and it was the only alcohol-free beer in Ireland in the 1980s and 90s. I didn't drink it myself, but based on what everybody told me at the time it was disgusting. But nowadays, alcohol-free beers are amazing. They're really good. They're also really expensive, which I think is you can spend 4.50 on a small can of alcohol-free IPA, and I do that sometimes. And then there's alcohol-free wines, some of which are okay. The red ones, which I liked red wine more than white wine. All red wine, alcohol-free red wine, is pretty disgusting, which is sad. I wish the scientists could invent or make a breakthrough on that score, but if they don't, I live with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Connor, thank you for your time. It has been absolutely incredible. And well may you wear your crown as the poster child for alcohol for Dry January anyway.
And what's
Thank
your own
you.
title? What's your title again? You said the sobriety
Oh,
queen?
I'm
No.
the sobriety propaganda queen.
Sobriety propaganda king. Well, there's a pair of us in it, so.
Exactly. Thanks, Connor.
Thank you.
No More Booze, the podcast, is produced, mixed, and mastered at the studios of Irish Audio Drama. For more information, visit irishaudiodrama.com.